Genesis Trust, a nonprofit, nonpolitical, and nonsectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Today our show is on the Great Invocation. And it's similar to a prayer, but there is a difference between a prayer and an invocation. And we've received a lot of questions asking us what an invocation is, how it differs from a prayer. And I think prayer and invocations have a lot in common. And one of the things that they do have in common is that they both, in my viewpoint, they're both ways of developing an intimate relationship with God, which is probably the most important thing that one can do. One of the things that I've always enjoyed doing that I would recommend to you is to write down your prayers. And one of the most astonishing things that I've realized is the other day I was looking at a file that I had that had several prayers that I had written to God and put them in the file. And I took them out and I looked at them. And what amazed me is that every prayer had been answered in one way or another. So that's a very good thing to do, and I strongly recommend it. But more importantly, let's get down to the heart of our show today, which is about the Great Invocation and answering some of your questions that you've frequently asked about what is an invocation and how is it different than prayer. And let's start off with this one. What is an invocation? Is it related to prayer?
It's related, but there are also fundamental differences. Prayer is an appeal to God, and usually it's an appeal with a personal wish or a personal relevance to it, and we all probably pray from time to time in moments of emergency and urgent need. But invocation is based more on the realization, as it said, draw near to God and He will draw near to you. In other words, as one strives to make an approach to divinity, whatever divinity means to one, that sets up a flow of energy that draws the divine quality into oneself and ignites it from within one's resources. Invocation has to start from below, in the sense that it has to begin within the human being, and then God responds. And this is a realization that goes back to the dawn of time for humanity. In fact, it's said that one of the most ancient prayers in the world comes from the Hindu religion, and that it's an invocation. It says, "Lead us from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, and from death to immortality." But there's another more modern invocation, which we call the Great Invocation. And maybe Dale could say that for us now before we start discussing it.
That would be a good thing. And I also just want to remind people that this is the invocation that Sarah always says at the closing of the show. Okay, Dale.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.
Now, it's so beautiful, and I hate to dissect something so beautiful. It's like dissecting a flower. It somehow is, you look at it whole, but I think it's necessary to ask about the Great Invocation. The first stanza refers to the reaching out for light.
Yes, this urge to light is something present not only within human beings, but within all living beings, within animals and with plants. Watching the vegetable kingdom is a depiction of the search for light. Plants literally follow the light of the sun and respond to it and carry out photosynthesis through the light of the sun. The human being aspires to light in a different way, the light of the mind and the light of God. And the first stanza says, let light stream forth into the minds, into human minds. And this is a setting up a relationship or a flow of response between the mind of God and the mind of man. And it's very interesting to reflect on this, because man actually is a word derived from the Sanskrit word manas, which means one who thinks, or thinking entity. So the human being has the capacity to function as a mind and to think in a way that is aligned with the thought of God in some sense. And even scientists are beginning to realize this, because Lewis Thomas, a physician of some sort, I think a specialist in biochemistry, and he was a writer who wrote The Lives of the Cell.
Oh, wonderful book, yeah.
Yeah, and The Medusa and the Snail. Mm-hmm. Well, he said he thought that we may be engaged in the formation of something like a mind for the life of this planet. And he was a scientist. So this is a recognition that's beginning to dawn in human consciousness, that human beings are an outpost of the mind of God.
Yes, and light, it's also the light, not only the light within the mind of God, it's reflected in the soul, so it's the light that is in the soul as well, and therefore it's within us, and it is that urge to betterment which draws us forward that we have within us. And each human being has the seeds of light within them, and that's probably the relationship to the flower, because we are in a sense like flowers, and we are in a process of growing and blooming, and so we turn our face to the light, just as the flower turns its face to the sun.
One of the interesting things to me is that two great religious festivals that celebrate light come at this time of the year, when in the Northern Hemisphere the days are shortest and there is greatest darkness. The birth of Christ is celebrated by Christians on December 25th, which is just a few days after the darkest moment of the year. And the Jewish festival of Hanukkah began just a couple of days ago, and that's at the great festival of lights. I think there's something to the fact that light is celebrated in darkness. It takes darkness to be able to appreciate the existence of light, in a sense, by the contrast.
Who is the coming one that's referred to in the Great Invocation?
Well, the coming one is another term for avatar. Perhaps some of our listeners have heard the word avatar. It's, again, a Sanskrit word meaning one who comes down from far away to earth, to humanity. The coming one is the embodiment of the love of God, and it's a being that is expected to return to earth, not only by Christians who look for Christ and the reappearance of Christ, but by people of many faiths. In fact, Buddhists expect the Maitreya, and the Muslims expect the Imam Mahdi, and Jewish people look for the Messiah. In fact, what's really quite fascinating is that the terms Christ and Messiah, Christ, I think, is a Greek term in origin, and Messiah is Hebrew in origin, but they both mean the Anointed One. Isn't that interesting that
that's
both mean the same thing? Anointed One, meaning consecrated and set apart as holy. So the coming one is this embodiment of the love of God that humanity looks for.
So the implication is that many religions are in reality looking for the same coming one.
Even if they don't realize it, yes.
And calling him a different name is all.
Because this urge for a perfect embodiment of love in human form is something that's deeply inherent in human nature. And it really has nothing to do with differences of religion or race or class or whatever. It's apparently a fundamental appeal or hope within human nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual to think of a coming one or this person returning. He actually hasn't left. He's always been here, but he's just not in a physical state. But if we think about it, it's not unusual for this coming one to return to a physical state because every human being does this with every lifetime. I mean, if we believe in the theory of reincarnation, then we all go through this same cyclic process, only most of us just do it more often than the avatar or the coming one. He comes maybe every couple of thousand years and the rest of us go much more quickly. I mean, we have life after life after life when we appear and then we disappear for a while and then we come back. But so it's not unusual to think that this great avatar will again appear.
Another point to keep in mind is that when we speak of the reappearance of the coming one, the return of the coming one, whether we mean Christ or the Messiah or the Maitreya, we're not only appealing for the return of this embodiment, this perfect expression of God's love in human form, but we're also invoking the quickening of the expression of this perfect love which exists within every human being, even though in many people it's very dormant. In other words, there's something called the soul or the Christ principle which exists in all human beings. It expresses itself better in some than in others. But when we appeal for the coming one to return, we are also appealing for the resurgence of this Christ principle, the soul, which is love in its most natural expression, to come to power, to be vivified in human beings. So again, it's a two-way street, the appeal for the coming one to return to Earth and at the same time for this quality within human beings to come to the forefront.
So am I to understand that one of the implications then in the Great Invocation is that we're all capable, we all have the potential within us of the pinnacle of love,
the
Christ consciousness? Or
well, Christ said, greater things than I have done ye shall do.
Mm-hmm.
And He predicted that human beings were capable of the same achievements as he had made. And Buddha said the same thing to his followers. These great beings enact for humanity in a kind of a prototype way, as I understand it, something which humanity is destined to achieve and fulfill individual by individual, until the very last one of us has made it through the gate into a realm of light and love.
So what we have to do then is to actualize that potential of love. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Why is, I don't mean for people to take offense to this, but maybe people feel a little bit insecure when humanity is is referred to as being little. And what is the meaning of that in the prayer?
You mean the little wills, the little human will?
Why is the human will referred to as little?
Well, there's, maybe Dale will have a different response, but I'll take a stab at it. There's the little human will, which is self-oriented.
Uh-huh.
And I think we're all probably acquainted with that will, and it's probably alive and kicking within each of us, the will that says, I want, I want, I want. And puts the selfish, separated interests of the personality first and foremost. The greater will, the spiritual will, is another matter altogether, and that comes from the soul. When we appeal for the purpose to be to become active in human beings, we're really appealing for the submergence of the little selfish will and the acquiescence of human will to God's will in cooperation. Not to become automatons, but to submerge and blend our will with the will of God in an act of cooperation on behalf of the plan.
And we have a beautiful example of goodwill on both of your part today, even though this is a nonprofit organization. We're giving everyone a gift, anyone who chooses to call us. We're giving away a gift on the Great Invocation. It's a booklet explaining the Great Invocation, and you're certainly welcome to call us and order that book. We'd be very happy to give it to you. It's one. Our phone number is 1-866-NY-LUCIS, a mnemonic device that you can remember it by. Is think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. And we would be just delighted to send that out to you. And also, we might mention, too, to order our books, because all of the discussions set forth on this show emanate from the writings of Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is our founder. And if you'd like to order our books, cassette tapes of the radio shows, cassette tapes of some of our books, by the way, too, and anything related to what Lucis Trust has, you can certainly do so by ordering once again on 1-866-NY-LUCIS. If you are just getting started with us, perhaps you can start off by reading the autobiography of Alice Bailey. And once again, she is our founder. I found it very interesting. She's overcome many challenges in life, and she's really faced obstacles that were almost superhuman at times, but she really developed into quite a wonderful human being. And it's very interesting to see, as you read it, how she became the person that she eventually became, and how she got into starting Lucis Trust. It's a fascinating story, but that's one of 24 volumes of literature. Sarah?
I would like to continue with this thought on the development of the human will by mentioning that the Great Invocation itself is a means of blending or merging one's will with the will of God, simply by working with this invocation on a daily level and endeavoring to deepen one's understanding of its meaning and to become an agent of its energy flow into human consciousness. One is serving to dedicate one's will to the will of God. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a tool for transformation in that sense. Not only does it bring one's own being into alignment with God's plan, but it works through each of us who uses the Great Invocation to help bring all of humanity more into alignment with the plan.
Mm-hmm. So once again, for a free booklet containing the Great Invocation, a schedule of our meditation meetings, or for more information about our organization, give us a call at 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. What is the door where evil dwells? It's referred to in the Great Invocation as the door where evil dwells. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, what we're doing is analyzing our invocation called the Great Invocation, which Sarah, who's our president, says at the closing of each show. But what is the door where evil dwells?
Well, there are different levels of evil, you could say. There's a kind of cosmic evil that we are told humanity really can have nothing to do with. It's beyond the control of humanity, and we are protected from it by the spiritual hierarchy. But there is human-generated evil for which we are responsible, the evil of separatism, of hatred, of prejudice, of cruelty that human beings are abundantly capable of expressing. This kind of evil is our creation, and we are responsible for eradicating it. And that evil is overcome by the building of right human relationships between people and by generating lines of light and love flowing between human beings, between groups, between nations. all of this is fostered by the great invocation and the energy flow that it lets into the world. It's an extremely potent, powerful invocation because it serves to merge human minds with the mind of God. It merges human hearts with the heart of God, setting up an energy flow for light and love that can then enter into the planet and not only uplift humanity, but help also to uplift the other kingdoms, animal, vegetable, and mineral. For just as the Bible says, man has dominion over the earth, those kingdoms are dependent on humanity's ability to cooperate with the plan of God or to not cooperate with it. And I think this is something that's coming very much to our realization through the science of ecology, that humanity has the capacity to impede the plan of God or to cooperate with it, and the planet suffers or rejoices depending on our decision.
In the literature, I found that in the literature on the Great Invocation, which many of our audience listeners are going to be ordering, and once again, it's for free, 1-866-NY-LUCIS in order to obtain that book, and do consider purchasing our other books as well. I think you'll find them challenging, I think you'll find them intriguing, and you might come out a very changed for the better type of person. But in the literature on the Great Invocation, what intrigued me was the power of the Great Invocation, the power of it to transform, to change. And I believe that because words are extremely powerful. And if anyone doubts that, just recall, and I don't like to play that tape for you again, but recall a time when someone hurt you with words. Your whole biochemistry can change. And here we have the Great Invocation, and it's just the opposite. The power of the words, I think, in the Great Invocation, they have a force, for me anyway, where they change my whole biochemistry for the good. And I think we have to acknowledge the ability of words coming from something as important as the Great Invocation to transform us in a positive way. Can you comment on that?
Yes, I think that it it does work kind of a magic. As one works with the Great Invocation, one is kind of taken over by it. And I'm speaking about those of us who have worked with it on a daily level for many years at a time. It's extremely impersonal, for one thing. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that it doesn't ask anything for the separated self. It asks for humanity as a whole, for the planet as a whole, and yet the individual part, which is each human being, is included within that flow of energy. But it's a perfect merging of the part with the whole, and the utter inclusiveness of it is what makes it so magical. Mm-hmm. It's for every living being. The appeal for light and love and power is for every living being, not only for a chosen few. I find that deeply appealing.
Well, from what I'm understanding, from what both of you are saying, is once again, just to recap, is a prayer is our words that are said to God for more or less for a personal purpose, whereas the invocation is more or less intended for humanity as a whole. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So the invocation, then, the Great Invocation, is really intended for humanity as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I might clarify that a little bit. I think prayer is more intercessionary and more petitionary type of approach or appeal to God. But invocation carries a much wider, deeper connotation, I think. invocation invokes energy. I mean, we're working with energies here. And as Sarah said, it's strictly impersonal. And what we are invoking is not for ourselves, but it's for the upliftment of humanity. And that's why in the invocation we invoke light and love and the power of the will to God, will to good.
Why does humanity seem to occupy such a crucial position in each stanza of the Great Invocation?
Well, it's said that in the writings of Alice Bailey, that the outstanding characteristic of humanity is its sensitivity or its responsiveness to impression, which I think means that humanity has the capacity to respond to God's plan. And again, we come back to the real meaning of the word man, which is manas, one who thinks. Through the mind, the awakening mind, and through the inclusive, open, sensitive heart, human beings are able to respond to God's plan and to become agents for it. And as agents, we can thereby serve the other kingdoms that share the planet with us, animal, vegetable, and mineral. It really comes down to the choices that humanity makes. Because we have the capacity to think, we have the capacity to make wrong choices. And so humanity is the crucial question mark in the working out of God's plan.
Humanity is a mediator. It's a kind of the middle kingdom between the lower kingdoms, the animal and the vegetable and the mineral kingdoms, excuse me, and the higher kingdoms, the spiritual kingdoms. So, but everything is focused in the human kingdom. It has to work out here, and that's our responsibility to see that it does work out in accordance with the will of God.
One of the questions that I get frequently asked of me about the Great Invocation is the word plan. Can we comment on that? Of course, we could do a whole show on that probably, but very briefly.
Yes. In fact, if some of the listeners want a little bit of more information on what we mean by plan, we can send them a pamphlet on it. But the plan is the basic structure or blueprint for the evolution of our planet, which is held in the mind of God and which he seeks to impress upon human beings for its furthering, for its manifestation on earth. It's a plan that is threefold, a plan of love, of light, and of power. And those three energies are invoked in the Great Invocation. Yeah. Those are the essential components of the plan.
What I like so much about the works of Alice Bailey, all 24 volumes which I've perused, is the idea that all life is to be treated with dignity. All people ought to be treated with dignity and understanding. And what I like about her work is that it unites mankind. We've spent so much time dividing the atom. I think that Alice Bailey deserves a lot of praise because she is very much concerned about uniting mankind, and that's a wonderful approach to life. Well, in closing, I just want to say that the Lucis Trust has always emphasized the power of goodwill, especially through its agency, World Goodwill. In closing, remember these words of Alice Bailey: goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. There's a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.